Hello, and welcome to the AI Spectrum Podcast. I'm your host, Spencer Akane. In this series, we explore a wide range of artificial intelligence topics from all across Siemens and how they are applied to different technologies. Today, I am once again joined by Dr. Justin Hodges, an AIML technical specialist and product manager for SimCenter, to discuss the ways generative AI is changing the world of engineering and simulation. Welcome, Justin. It's good to have you back.
Hello. It's always a pleasure to talk with you, and obviously always a pleasure for me to talk about AI.
Great. Well, before we jump into our topic, can you give our listeners a brief overview of your background and your role at Siemens?
Yep, sure. So I started out doing undergraduate, master's, and then PhD at the University of Central Florida on mechanical engineering. And specifically, I had a turbo machinery focus with thermal fluids, heat transfer, numerical experimental mix. And then somewhere in 2017 in fall, I had my first professional experience with AI in our Siemens Health and Ears group in Princeton, which our focus was simulations and AI in combination for a better diagnosis approach for a certain kind of lung disease. And that was kind of a surreal experience because I just saw the other interns replacing applications for some numerical simulation techniques like every day with AI. And I mean, that was a long time ago, right? That was in 2017. So I kind of realized at that point, my vector career-wise for at least that nearest decade would be machine learning. And I came back and finished my PhD with a huge focus on machine learning as much as I could to what I'd already had planned in my dissertation. And then since then, just on the side, professionally at work, in all scenarios, just educating and ramping up and getting more and more experiences with machine learning. And then a few years back now, I started with the opportunity to formally do that at Siemens as my contribution in my role here. And my role is that of a technical specialist for AIML in product management. And we will probably have viewers from all across the portfolio as far as their favorite software that they use. And I'm delighted to say that my focus isn't just on one of them, but kind of a portfolio-wide perspective on how AI should be implemented into our products across our portfolio. So that's me.
Wow, it sounds like you've really been like in the AI space for quite a long while now, just kind of following it as it progresses. And that kind of leads us into our main topic here, the kind of latest hotness of the AI world, which is, of course, generative AI. So can you give like a definition of that? Like what is generative AI really?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I think it's easy to get confused. And even ChatGPT could probably get confused pretty easily here. So it's definitely something to start out with. Good point. So in the simplest sense, I would say generative AI to me is a means for creating different types of media and content. And essentially, it's a very complex situation as far as learning from vast amounts of data. And usually what you see are some pretty high fidelity models in the machine learning world that are being used. They don't require a lot of human intervention, and then they can produce some pretty amazing things. And I think we've seen quite a lot of examples. So producing text, you know, you've seen ChatGPT and other language models that are conversational. So the Llama model from Meta or Bard from Google or GPT-4 from OpenAI or the new Palm 2 model. And then before the craze of ChatGPT, you probably saw text to image. So, you know, write a prompt and then DALL-E or other really famous stable diffusion models would create pictures of animals, faces, photorealistic stuff. And that's just become more and more as well in the backdrop. And just lastly, I mean, it can make music, editing tools, social media content, you know, all kinds of things, right? So it's really about generating with these complex models from a minimum amount of human intervention or oversight as far as actually doing it, producing the stuff it's creating. And then one last thing, I'm already a bit long-winded, sorry, but I think it's important to address probably the familiar area that our audience would be experienced in as far as machine learning, mm-hmm. or surrogates or statistical stuff. You know, so you could look at that as like fitting data, right? I think a lot of our CAE related customers are probably familiar with producing some sort of CAE data and then fitting data to it and fitting a model to it, excuse me, like a reduced order model or surrogate. And so that exercise of data fitting is not necessarily generative AI, but we can still do things with that that would then later constitute as generative AI at a high level as far as creating new things, which I think we'll get into in the engineering context, but hopefully that provides backdrop as to different things you see in the landscape and kind of dividing between generative and non-generative.
Yeah, I think that's a great kind of starting place there to say, like a good definition for, so make sure we're all on the same page when we're talking about generative AI. So to be clear, generative AI is not like when you have a bunch of data points and you're, to put it simply, kind of like fitting a line between them and saying, if I keep going on this line, then I'll reach this other data point that I haven't like experimentally measured, for instance, and this kind of, and the AI equivalent of that, but generative would be different from that, correct?
Right. So, you know, let's say you run some simulations and you want to, you know, use a regression approach to basically fit a model that can accurately, you know, capture those data points. So it could be linear regression, polynomial model, or something AI specific like a neural network. So in that case, that's in this class of like data driven, you know, approaches to fit data. But the distinction is maybe you have a more broad design philosophy where you need those types of ROMs and surrogates to be created so that you can go off and do sort of generative engineering and things like that, where at that point, instead of doing time consuming simulation or physical measurement, you can use these surrogates that you created. And in that case, the purpose of that global exercise could be, you know, please find better designs faster, please generate novel rules for my design space, things like that. And they could be sort of powered by surrogates. But in that case, you know, indeed, you are doing generative engineering, and that does push it in the category of generative AI. So not to make things too confusing here, but yeah, strictly, you know, this class of fitting models with ROMs, it's not in that category of generative AI.
Right. Yeah, I just wanted to make sure we were covering that, both kind of on the same page there, just to be sure. So with that kind of basic definition out of the way, I think we are good to jump into our main topic here. So how do you see this type of generative AI being applied within the CAE or the computer-aided engineering space, or even the simulation space as well?
We have this really cool concept in our group at Siemens of learning day. So several times a year, we'll allocate a full day towards learning new things and maybe exploring things we quite haven't had time to. And there is a class on generative AI that was offered, and essentially had a really good quote at the beginning that I like to start with. So the quote is, lifting the dirty, dull, dangerous, and difficult tasks from humanity's shoulders so we can simply focus on the very essence of our work, the vision, the idea, and the purpose. And I think that's really great, because we could probably all or most of us stop and reflect on the deliverables we provide at our job and basically think about how much of it is dirty, dull, dangerous, or difficult, and how it could be in a sense a distraction. So I think there's a lot of examples for generative AI to really allow us to spend more of our time, a higher portion of our time, on our actual discipline and expertise and doing that delivery, rather than just sort of the mechanics that may be time consuming and dull. Yeah, I don't know if that resonates with you at all, but for me, I can certainly imagine.
Absolutely understand that feeling. I think for everybody, there's an element of their job or elements that is just like, it's something that has to be done, but it's not interesting or exciting, or it's not really part of their core responsibilities, but it just has to be completed, basically. And I think we would all like it if that could just be automated, like a click of the button, or just say, hey, you know, ChatGPT, can you go and fill out this form for me? Here's all the data is in this CSV file, and then just go put this in and figure it out.
Yeah. So this is really the first theme here of like user experience, right? We want the user experience of the software we provide to be less of those things, right? Dull and difficult, etc. So, I mean, this is not a new concept, right? You can think about Microsoft Word, Clippy from, I don't remember when, like 20 years ago. And really, it's supposed to be like a support-based thing, right? It's supposed to enable you and provide you support on demand. And I think that there's plenty of examples of that now for use cases for some of our generative AI models and these conversational tools. So, you know, things like you can use AI for rapid answers on what's the documentation, you know, rather if I have a question, rather than going to the documentation, you know, it can just provide you the answer. It can work as a knowledge base for other data or results or practices inside your larger company. And then maybe it could act as best practice, providing you best practices. So especially as you go to larger and larger companies, you know, this information is usually spread out in different documents, different places, different people, different projects. And really the consolidation of that into a machine learning model means that you can just talk and conversationally get that information from the model rather than have to, you know, do the traditional thing of looking through a huge support document or reading a bunch of separate things and then and that sort of thing.
Like that could take several hours really to look through everything. If you're looking, have a very specific question, for example, I know I've experienced that where I have a very specific question I'm looking for and it'll take me an hour, 2 hours to find it sometimes because it's, you know, just a single page in a very obscure help document. Like it exists, but as a user, I'm having trouble finding it just because it's buried among, you know, a mountain of other information. So like, that's what you're saying, AI could really help with that, I think.
Yeah, and it gives us other sort of things, right? Like standardization is really important. How you go through and interpret all of that information might be different than somebody else. Or if people are running simulations in the same software, same version, same domain, you know, say turbo machinery, it can still vary vastly from person to person, different countries, different, you know, preferences or styles. I mean, so it can be a way to help standardize. It can also help beginners to rapidly contribute. So in that case, you know, there's probably like an apprehension or a learning curve at first when you jump into a new area or start a new job, can probably really help with that. And really, you know, if you think about like the last time you used the software and went through the support document, you probably learned a few things and then carried that forward. But then if somebody else individually does the same, they may not capture like what you learned as well. So when these sort of models are useful to consolidate information and provide a sense as well in the answers that it's telling you based on history, historical data, historical models you have, et cetera. But other than support, there's really more technical things that are also super appealing about this. And part of that is not just like support documents and stuff like that, but it's also expert knowledge, right? So, you know, I could take raw simulation data as an expert in a certain domain, and I can basically make inferences and conclusions from it, right? You know, is this tip vortex too high? Is this separation too large? Is the temperature gradient too high for the mechanical lifing of the part, right? Those things may not be obvious. They're definitely not in the support manual. But really, you can annotate that information and then store it somewhere and basically have a model as well learn from that. So, you know, it could basically be like if you're doing something and generating results and looking over them in your traditional way of doing things, it's like you have an expert over your shoulder. So that's when it gets even more and more fun, right? Because then you're learning things from physics and you're kind of consolidating it into just conversation stuff, right? Like good design, bad design, this too big, that too small, etc. So I think both are pretty big for this idea of like, well, it could make the user experience and the software a lot better. But probably one of the coolest things to look at, I would say, as a final item here, as far as user experience, would be stuff, I don't know what to call it, managing workflows. So basically, I could just, that can mean a few things, right? I mean, I could just like speak or conversationally talk to this ChatGPT, for example, and it could kick off different simulation runs. It could do different complex tasks. It could set up models for me. Things like that, or maybe like as I'm doing what I normally do in my software, clicking around doing things, maybe like little, you know, histograms pop up and say, oh, I think you're going to do this next. If you want to click this button to accept it, it'll just automate and do that whole chain of sequences we expect you want. I think in AIMSIM, we have a capability there where you know, you're building a system simulation model. You have this machine learning in the background learning from your tendencies, and then it starts suggesting to you the parts that you may want to put into your assembly next. And then it saves a lot of time, right?
Absolutely.
And yeah, and it's a bit on the border of generative AI, but I would say a last thing in this idea of managing workflows is, in every industry, there's probably different challenges, right? Like in automotive, there's thousands or hundreds of parts like in a simulation. And it's just, you know, we've gotten a lot of feedback that, that dealing with that takes more time as the user and simulation architect than maybe running the simulation sometimes. So you have really point solutions, application specific sort of applications of machine learning, where maybe you make a machine learning model that can recognize all those parts for you, like we have in our services team. Or, you know, maybe meshing is really intensive for a certain application, and we could use this generative sort of predictive AI model class family to handle those sorts of tasks, right? The complex task of doing all the steps in a meshing sequence, or like pre-processing in general. So there's a lot there. I mean, it's really dense, but I think the opportunity is really vast, and you'll see a lot of these things percolate into society and as well as CAE.
Thanks, Justin. That was a really insightful answer. But unfortunately, that is all the time we have today. So once again, I have been your host, Spencer Akain, and thank you for joining me on the AI Spectrum podcast. Tune in next time as we continue our discussion on the exciting topic of generative AI.